2. Tragedy and Comedy. Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. With these fateful words, Count Leo Tolstoy opened the novel of the spiritual dismemberment of his modern heroine, Anna Karenina. During the 7 decades that have elapsed since that distracted wife, mother, and blindly impassioned mistress threw herself beneath the wheels of the train, thus terminating with a gesture symbolic of what already had happened to her soul, her tragedy of disorientation, a tumultuous and unremitting dithyramb of romances, news reports, and unrecorded cries of anguish, has been going up to the honor of the bull demon of the labyrinth. The wrathful, destructive, maddening aspect of the same God who, when benign, is the vivifying principle of the world. Modern romance, like Greek tragedy, celebrates the mystery of dismemberment, which is life in time. The happy ending is justly scorned as a misrepresentation, for the world as we know it, as we have seen it, yields but one ending. Death, disintegration, dismemberment, and the crucifixion of our heart with the passing of the forms that we have loved. Pity is the feeling which arrests the mind in the presence of whatever is grave and constant in human sufferings and unites it with the human sufferer. Terror is the feeling which arrests the mind in the presence of whatsoever is grave and constant in human sufferings and unites it with the secret cause. As Gilbert Murray has pointed out in his preface to Ingram Bywater's translation of the Poetics of Aristotle, tragic catharsis, i.e. the purification or purgation of the emotions of the spectator of tragedy through his experience of pity and terror, corresponds to an earlier ritual catharsis, a purification of the community from the taints and poisons of the past year, the old contagion of sin and death, which was the function of the festival and mystery play of the dismembered bull god Dionysus. The meditating mind is united in the mystery play not with the body that is shown to die, but with the principle of continuous life that for a time inhabited it, and for that time was the reality clothed in the apparition, at once the sufferer and the secret cause, the substratum into which ourselves dissolve when the tragedy that breaks man's face has split, shattered, and dissolved our mortal frame.
Appear, appear, what so thy shape or name, O mountain bull, snake of the 100 heads, lion of the burning flame, O God, beast, mystery, come. Euripides, Bacchae.
This death to the logic and the emotional commitments of our chance moment in the world of space and time, this recognition of and shift of our emphasis to the universal life that throbs and celebrates its victory in the very kiss of our own annihilation, this amor fati, love of fate, love of the fate that is inevitably death, constitutes the experience of the tragic art. Therein, the joy of it, the redeeming ecstasy.
My days have run, the servant I, initiate of Idaean Jove, where midnight Zagreus roves, I rove. I have endured his thunder cry, fulfilled his red and bleeding feasts, held the great mother's mountain flame. I am set free and named by name a Bacchus of the mailed priests. Euripides, the Cretans.
Modern literature is devoted, in great measure, to a courageous, open-eyed observation of the sickeningly broken figurations that abound before us, around us, and within. Where the natural impulse to complain against the Holocaust has been suppressed, to cry out blame, or to announce panaceas. The magnitude of an art of tragedy, more potent for us than the Greek, finds realization. The realistic, intimate, and variously interesting tragedy of democracy, where the god is beheld crucified in the catastrophes, not of the great houses only, but of every common home, every scourged and lacerated face. And there is no make-believe about heaven, future bliss, and compensation to alleviate the bitter majesty, but only utter darkness, the void of unfulfillment, to receive and eat back the lives that have been tossed forth from the womb, only to fail. In comparison with all this, our little stories of achievement seem pitiful. Too well we know what bitterness of failure, loss, disillusionment, and ironic unfulfillment galls the blood of even the envied of the world. Hence, we are not disposed to assign to comedy the high rank of tragedy. Comedy as satire is acceptable. As fun, it is a pleasant haven of escape. But the fairy tale of happiness ever after cannot be taken seriously. It belongs to the never-never land of childhood, which is protected from the realities that will become terribly known soon enough, just as the myth of heaven ever after is for the old, whose lives are behind them, and whose hearts have to be readied for the last portal of the transit into night, which sober, modern, Occidental judgment is founded on a total misunderstanding of the realities depicted in the fairy tale, the myth, and the divine comedies of redemption. These, in the ancient world, were regarded as of a higher rank than tragedy, of a deeper truth, of a more difficult realization, of a sounder structure, and of a revelation more complete. The happy ending of the fairy tale, the myth and the divine comedy of the soul, is to be read not as a contradiction, but as a transcendence of the universal tragedy of man. The objective world remains what it was, but because of a shift of emphasis within the subject, is beheld as though transformed. Where formerly life and death contended, now enduring being is made manifest, as indifferent to the accidents of time as water boiling in a pot is to the destiny of a bubble, or as the cosmos to the appearance and disappearance of a galaxy of stars. Tragedy is the shattering of the forms and of our attachment to the forms. Comedy, the wild and careless, inexhaustible joy of life, invincible. Thus, the two are the terms of a single mythological theme and experience which includes them both and which they bound. The down-going and the upcoming, kathedos and anodos, which together constitute the totality of the revelation that is life, and which the individual must know and love if he is to be purged. Catharsis equals purgatorio, of the contagion of sin, disobedience to the divine will, and death, identification with the mortal form. All things are changing. Nothing dies. The spirit wanders, comes now here, now there, and occupies whatever frame it pleases. For that which once existed is no more, and that which was not has come to be. And so the whole round of motion is gone through again. Only the bodies, of which this eternal, imperishable, incomprehensible self is the indweller, are said to have an end. It is the business of mythology proper, and of the fairy tale, to reveal the specific dangers and techniques of the dark interior way, from tragedy to comedy. Hence the incidents are fantastic and unreal. They represent psychological, not physical, triumphs. Even when the legend is of an actual historical personage, the deeds of victory are rendered, not in lifelike, but in dreamlike figurations. For the point is not that such and such was done on earth. The point is that before such and such could be done on earth, this other, more important, primary thing had to be brought to pass within the labyrinth that we all know and visit in our dreams. The passage of the mythological hero may be overground, incidentally. Fundamentally, it is inward, into depths where obscure resistances are overcome and long lost, forgotten powers are revivified, to be made available for the transfiguration of the world. This deed accomplished, life no longer suffers hopelessly under the terrible mutilations of ubiquitous disaster, battered by time, hideous throughout space. But with its horror visible still, its cries of anguish still tumultuous, it becomes penetrated by an all-suffusing, all-sustaining love, and a knowledge of its own unconquered power. Something of the light that blazes invisible within the abysses of its normally opaque materiality breaks forth with an increasing uproar. The dreadful mutilations are then seen as shadows, only of an imminent, imperishable eternity. Time yields to glory, and the world sings with the prodigious, angelic, but perhaps finally monotonous siren music of the spheres. Like happy families, the myths and the worlds redeemed are all alike.